Welcome to the Money Rules Podcast, where we tackle your personal financial matters with leading financial advisors. Your host, Boitumelo Ntsoko.
Today's topic hits home for so many South Africans, maybe even for you. Have you taken on the responsibility of caring for your parents who need financial support? Do you also have kids depending on you for school fees, sports kits, lunch money, and all? If that sounds like your reality, chances are you're a part of what's called the sandwich generation. To unpack what this means, the financial pressure that comes with it, and how you can stay sane and solvent in the process, I'm joined by Elke Brink, a wealth advisor at PSG Wealth R21. Welcome, Elke, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Boitumelo.
Elke, let's start at the beginning. The sandwich generation is a relatively new term for a very old reality. Could you explain who falls into this category and why we're seeing this more and more in South Africa today?
So, the sandwich generation is becoming more and more reality, I think, for most people in their, I would say, midlife. And what it comes down to is that you fall into a position that you need to take care not only of your children, who are still financially dependent, but also taking care of your parents, who are in older age and in some way or another dependent on you to assist. Should it be with not having made enough provision for retirement, or should it be with additional unforeseen expenses for perhaps moving into an old age home or having assistance for frail care or additional medical expenses. So being stuck in the middle in the sandwich that you essentially don't have a lot of moving space for providing financially for yourself and doing optimal financial planning for you as an individual and your own family because you're providing for multiple generations.
And what are some of the main reasons why so many parents are finding themselves dependent on their children for financial support?
I think there's a combination of factors playing a role. I think one of the first factors is that I think there's a large part of the generation of, I would say, 70 plus that are living longer, firstly, and at the impact of inflation and of cost of living that has increased substantially, individuals are also living longer, which makes a big difference. And then I think that cost of living, and I think sometimes almost a little bit of the sandbox ostrich mindset that you didn't specifically, I think a lot of individuals don't always think that it would apply to them, that they would have these unforeseen additional expenses, where a lot of people do end up needing to move to a more expensive old age home or having some form or another of frail care and or unforeseen medical expenses. Maybe you fall ill, maybe you need some treatment when you're older. But I think the life expectancy for a married couple is 94. So I think just that time frame of maybe not having saved sufficiently for retirement and struggling to keep up with inflation.
Now, Elke, we often hear stories of people managing work, school runs, aging parents, and trying to save for retirement, which is quite a lot. What are some of the most common financial mistakes people make in this position?
I think what becomes very difficult when you have to take care of two different generations now in your family is that you end up almost repeating mistakes that maybe your parents have made that now for X amount of years, you are also not sufficiently planning for your own financial future. And that's what I do find a lot with individual investors, that I think apart from if you would have the perfect portfolio that is earning a proper return, it's structured well, a lot of investors are guilty of percentage-wise physically not saving enough compared to what they earn. So from a replacement ratio point of view, you're never going to be in the same position that what you are used to earning. So because of the financial pressure of having to have all these commitments, a lot of individuals are simply not saving enough. And then adding on other financial commitments, like you mentioned, like trying to pay off a bond and trying to pay off maybe study loans for the children or school fees, or the combination of all of these commitments and things you can't really get away from. But I think it comes down to almost a budgeting 101. Also, maybe there are certain aspects of your life that you are overcommitting to. Should it be housing? Should it be the car you drive? Should it be what you are prioritizing, but you for 10 or 15 years stepping away from actually providing for your own financial future, which just recreates a new generation of problems and not having sufficient provision or having a lot of debt that was not easy to get out of again.
Now, you just touched on budgeting, which is one of the key pieces of advice I came across when preparing for this episode. Could you walk us through how someone in this situation should approach the budgeting process?
Yeah, I think it becomes difficult when you have commitments that, in essence, should potentially not have been there. I think in the perfect world, you would perhaps not have been in a position where you still need to take care of a adult child or a fairly older child that should have been financially independent by now. And you should maybe not have been in the position where you also need to take care of your parents. So this is not the ideal position when you're in this. So there needs to be a bit of a realignment in terms of how you then manage the budget, because we are, you know, it's the reality. So there, it really does come back to almost a bit of a going back to the drawing board and really deciding what is the priority. I would very much analyze again, what am I really spending on housing? What am I really spending on which type of school my kids go to? And to what excess do we live our luxurious life in terms of which expenses are luxuries and which expenses are needed? Because I think in essence, you always have to go back to this is just delayed gratification in terms of there has to be a large priority and also saving for yourself. Otherwise, we're going to sit in the same problem again 20 years from now, being able to retire and having to really do a bit of a lifestyle cut. So I would rather tone back a bit on the day-to-day expenses and ensuring we're still prioritizing the future expenses, and also focusing on something like emergency funds and ensuring we're planning for that. Because I think when we're planning for all these different generations, there are sometimes a lot of unforeseen expenses that tend to creep up. So having a sufficient emergency fund in place becomes ever the more important, ensuring that you don't have to take out of your bond if not necessary, or not take out of additional savings you have, or maybe longer term savings you have to supplement shorter term expenses that were maybe just not planned for.
Okay, we'll get to a bit of the risk planning a little bit later, but I just want to touch on this. How can people involve their parents in honest, respectful conversations about money, especially when it hasn't been the norm in their family?
I think this is such a wonderful topic, and I think it's a very difficult one. So, interestingly enough, finances are one of the biggest topics that creates conflict in any relationship. Should it be a romantic relationship? Should it be a family relationship? Should it be a business relationship? So, it's a very difficult thing to navigate. And I sometimes find, especially in the South African world, it's been for so many years a very conservative topic that it's not well communicated about. And it comes down to communicating about finances from early on. And I think it's such an important topic because I think a lot of mistakes can be avoided. And I think a lot of mistakes can be avoided and planning errors can be avoided if there's just open communication. So this doesn't only apply, I think, to communicating with your parents and communicating with your children, but also communicating with your partner and knowing exactly what is on the table, what are we working with, even if it's sometimes difficult topics like having debt in place or not having sufficient provision in place for the future. You would rather want to know these things earlier rather than later. I think touching on this topic, I think perhaps a family, and that goes to all three generations now, is trying to implement this into your life. I think it's important to rather understand, perhaps in the sandwich topic now, understanding as the child earlier on in your life if your parent has enough provision or not. Because if you still have 10 years to work with, you can still create a significant different picture if you can optimize the 10 years and ensure that there's enough provision being made, the existing investments are structured correctly. You can still make a really big change, even if you have 5 years left. But if you only start having the conversations once someone is retiring or once they are stepping into this phase, it becomes very difficult to change the outcome. So I think communication comes down to having it earlier on and also having it with your children, understanding, like having this discussion with students who are almost heading into the workspace. What is the expectation? What is the planning? At what stage do you become financially independent? And how do we navigate this as a family in terms of at what point do you also stop supporting as a parent, not only assisting your child also in becoming independent, which I think is important, but also knowing as a family what the timelines are and the expectations are.
Well, you actually just touched on two questions that I have, which, you know, revolve around involving other members of the family and also just talking with your kids about how they plan to sort out their education or participate in sorting out their varsity expenses. But let's jump to this one. Something that many people in the sandwich generation tend to put on the back burner is their retirement planning. Why is this such a dangerous move?
I think it's a humanity error, and I think we're all guilty of it. I think we all live in a phase where we're quite prone to instant gratification. We sometimes think this phase will never come. And I find that with so many investors, even individuals who are near retirement, who are maybe just 10 years away or so, never mind younger people who are 40 years away from retirement, is that they simply think this phase will never come. And I think that compounding effect in your financial planning is so incredibly important. And I think individuals don't always take the time to really, for 5 minutes, sit down and understand the calculation of what you actually need to save and grow and compound over many years to be able to simply retire with what you're earning now. And that figure is, it's not an easy thing to hear, but the rough calculation when you're basically just starting out is that you need to basically, for your 40 years of your work life, you need to save 15 to 20% of your income to be able to just replace what you used to earning to live the same lifestyle if we have to adjust it for inflation. And I think that's something that a lot of investors are guilty of, that they're simply not saving enough. They're saving 5 or 7% of their income. It's not being adjusted for inflation. So you're simply not keeping up with cost of living. And I think it's that mindset of rather having more in pocket at this stage, but not really thinking of the future. And that there's a very good reason why this statistic still referred to that only roughly 6% of individuals can retire comfortably. Unfortunately, we do see this a lot, that a lot of individuals need to take a step back in terms of lifestyle, that you have to cut your income by 30 or 40%, if not more. And that's a big thing. Like, in principle, I know we refer to replacement ratios of when you retire, you maybe only need to 75% or 70% of your income. But in reality, for the average individual, it's not a very easy step to suddenly cut your household income that you were used to by 30%. That makes that you have to make a lot of lifestyle adjustments of, do you go eat out tonight or do you buy this bottle of wine or buy this coffee? And that's not the ideal for any individual to be in or any family to be in. So you want to ideally plan a phase where you can continue the lifestyle that you were used to. And that just takes some time and it takes some good planning. And I think that's important to do earlier on. Rather cut slightly on the type of expenses you're doing now and make sure you're also addressing this in the future.
And then can you share any other tips for people to prioritize their retirement savings?
I think when it comes to the optimal retirement, I think a lot of it comes down to planning the optimal portfolio in terms of, not only does it come down to saving optimally, which is a well-spoken topic, I think it becomes very important how you save and where you save. So the ideal retirement doesn't just consist out of one type of products. And why I normally mention that is that I think a lot of investors save the bulk of their income in their retirement fund at work or perhaps a retirement annuity in their personal capacity. And what that in essence means in future is now you convert this product into a living annuity or a life annuity one day. And this, your whole bulk of your income is again taxed on the pay as you earn scale, where I find investors sometimes forget about the tax implication that happens at retirement, where if you could optimize some different products earlier on in your life, like a tax-free investment or some discretionary type of investments like sinking funds or voluntary investments or a combination of them, you can decrease your overall taxation effect and create some liquidity. So I think retirement planning becomes a very detailed planning, not only in terms of saving sufficiently and ensuring optimal growth, but ensuring liquidity, ensuring optimal taxation, and of course, addressing estate planning to an effect. The moment you retire, in most scenarios, you are also taking care of a spouse or potentially a financial dependent or a household that you also want to be sure, should something happen to you, that this individual that lives your life with you will also be okay.
Olga, just lastly, beyond budgeting and saving, there's also risk planning. And for that, there are practical tools that can help. For example, estate planning, reviewing insurance, and as you mentioned earlier, setting up emergency funds. Where should people begin?
Yeah, I think that's incredibly important. I think emergency funds for any individual, whether you are 20 years old or 80 years old, is always relevant. I think exactly as the wording says, unforeseen expenses do creep up on you. And sometimes it's minor, sometimes it's big. And I think it's important to have that, to not be in a position where you don't have liquidity in your portfolio. So making planned provision for this and ensuring it doesn't always have to be in the negative context for an emergency. It can be for a holiday or something positive as well. But knowing there's liquidity for additional expenses or unforeseen expenses. When it comes to risk planning, I think it ever-moving planning in any portfolio. So if you are a younger individual and you potentially still have some debt or you have minor children or you potentially really still need to supplement your income in your household if you are not able to work anymore, or you pass away, that's very important to ensure you have sufficient risk planning in place. So our biggest asset is the ability to earn an income. And if we're not able to do so anymore, either by not being able to work or by passing away, we need to take care of our households. Life cover becomes a very interesting topic. So there is one or two routes that happens next. Is either you have a sufficient investment portfolio at some stage that you don't physically need this cover anymore and you can essentially either decrease it or cancel it. Or it's a very good opportunity of creating wealth with next generations. So what we do often is that we provide the option for individuals to have their children take over the premium. Of course, if affordable and if the premium pattern and the escalation of this premium and the cover makes sense. But it's an excellent opportunity sometimes to create wealth for future generations by a family member taking over a premium that you don't lose all of the cover you have paid for many years, but it stays within the family. And of course, at some point, the wealth will be passed on to generations.
Thank you so much, Alka, for your wisdom. I think a lot of our listeners are walking away with real practical steps they can take.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
That was Alka Brink, a wealth advisor at PSG Wealth R21.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Money Rules Podcast. To listen to more, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.
Money Rules.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.